So in this parsha class, we try to address things that people don't really know or understand, like strange stuff, things that maybe people heard of, maybe people think things people didn't hear of, or don't have an easy way to deal with. Sometimes I find interesting things. Sometimes I try to deal with issues that have been festering for a long time by a lot of people. And tonight's class is the latter. I'm going to try to deal with a festering issue. That's the issue of Yaakov Avinu's sons massacring a city. Massacring a city, according to some opinions, 500,000 people. Abar Benel disagrees. It was a small town. Whether it was a few hundred people or a few thousand people or hundreds of thousands of people, it was certainly a massacre. And there's a really real question whether the Torah sanctions this or not. Is this appropriate? Is it inappropriate? Did it do a bad thing? Did it do a good thing? Was it legal? Was it illegal? How does it fit into the general perspective of Torah Judaism? The anti-Semites love this story. They say, see? That's the Jews. They're a bunch of murderers and so on and so forth. And what is the truth? What really is the truth? So when I posted this class a few hours ago on Facebook, I would be teaching about it. So one person said, you asked too many questions. And somebody else said, of course it was wrong. Jacob criticized them. To which I responded, both of you are wrong. And I will try to use the next hour or so to open your eyes, to give you a broader perspective, to understand this story through the prism of Torah tradition and through what is reasonable and not reasonable. So let's first talk about what's not reasonable. What's not reasonable is to come to Torah with a preconceived notion and to fit the Torah into your own image or into your own frame. So this is the conclusion drawn before the investigation begins, like some filmmakers who go on investigative documentaries but actually have the summation written before they started. It's a question of how to get there. And if you're smart enough and if you listen to the evidence, quote unquote, that's presented, you'll see that the evidence is presented in a certain way. Certain things they include, certain things they won't include, because the conclusion is preconceived and they didn't come to this with an open mind. The notion that it can't be right. It can't be right, so therefore it must be bad. It doesn't fit into what makes us comfortable in the 21st century, and therefore we have to find a way to make it look bad or look inappropriate because it doesn't fit with what we consider to be Jewish values of the 20th or 21st century is not an honest way to approach a story. It's not honest because it's not honest, because it's not really coming to learn the Torah. It's coming with preconceived notions. And it's wrong, because if you learn the psukim properly, you'll see it's wrong. I didn't approach this with any preconceived notion. I didn't know the answer. I started doing this many years ago. Every year I learn a little more. Every year I fit a few more pieces together. And this year, under the duress of having to deliver this class, I try to fit all the pieces together. I'm sure there's still missing pieces, but this is best I could do for now. So let's start the story at the beginning of the story, and then we'll see why preconceived notions are wrong and so on and so forth. Everybody's invited to open the Chumash. The words in the Chumash are not emblazoned on my forehead, and it's always a good idea to look inside Asius Machkimais, whether you're here or watching out there on Facebook. So this in the Chumash, it starts a new chapter. It starts chapter 34. Which happens to be the fifth reading of the Torah. In the previous reading, the fourth reading concludes with Yaakov Avinu still on his way back home, having arrived in the Holy Land of Eretz Yisrael, and a father Jacob is pleased to spend money. It's not a lot of money, but he spends like small change to buy or purchase a piece of the land of Israel just to show how much he loves the land of Israel. He doesn't actually need this land, or he's not really planning to stay here. It's not like Avraham Avinu under duress who purchased the land because you can't rent a grave. You have to purchase that land. But Avraham Avinu here actually Yaakov buys a small plot of land for not a lot, 80 grams of silver, like not even 3 ounces of silver. And he could have paid in a few large coins, but he pays in small coins, called kesita, which is also sometimes used as jewelry. And the Rebbe says this was in order to demonstrate his fondness for the promised land of Israel, that he was really willing to spend money on it. And he settles outside of a city which is called Shechem. He builds a mizbeach there. He thanks Hashem for having been saved and delivered from the circumstances and the challenges of Esav. And life is good. Or is it? Fifth reading begins. Vateitze Dina bas Lea, asher yolda Yaakov. So Dina, the daughter of Leah, who had been born to Jacob, goes out, lirois bibnei sa'aretz. She went out to observe the girls of the region, of the area. Now Dina does not have any sisters. She's an only female in a large house full of males. No sisters to play with. And it's natural, it's easy to understand. She went out to see the girls. Take a look in Rashi. Rashi notes that it says here, Vateitze Dina bas Leah. It says Dina, the daughter of Leah. But usually when we speak of lineage, we speak of the father's name. But at any rate, the Torah clearly made a point of saying Bas Leah and not Bas Yaakov. It was Bas Leah asher yolda Yaakov, the daughter of Leah who had born him to Yaakov. The easy way to say that, the short way to say it is Dina Bas Yaakov. So Rashi says, Bas Leah, the Torah calls her the daughter of Leah, not the daughter of Leah and Yaakov, or the daughter of Yaakov. Al-Shem Yitziyasa, because she went out. And this going out, this is why she's called Bas Leah, Sha'af Hi Yatza'onis Haisa. She was also a girl who went out, a young lady who went out. Shanemar, as it's written, Vateitze Leah Likrosa, Leah goes out to greet our father Jacob, Yaakov Avinu. And Rashi finishes off and he says, about Dina, people say, Mishaleh HaMashal, this is where the metaphor comes from. So the metaphor actually is said of the city of Yerushalayim. But at any rate, they said that the city, that based on Dina, they said, Ki'ima Kibita, like mother, like daughter. Like mother, like daughter. So Leah was a forward woman, she went out. And Dina went out. What does that sound like? It sounds like Leah is modest or immodest? Say, Dina is modest, sounds immodest. Sounds like the kind of nonsense you hear from Hollywood today. She was asking for it. Was a stupidity like that? So first of all, how could the Torah say that? Why would the Torah introduce a story about abuse and rape by saying that that Dina went out as if to some way attribute some kind of blame to her? It seems totally unfair. Leah goes out when Rachel purchases, so to speak, or buys the rights to Yaakov with the dudaim, with the jasmine flowers and the mandrakes. It's a much earlier example. This is the parsha before.
Okay.
Right? In Parshas Vayetze,
right.
Leah goes out and says to Yaakov, come, you're not going home with Rachel tonight. Tonight you go home with me.
Okay.
So the Rebbe asks a question, a simple question. Why would the Torah mention something inappropriate about Dina? Even if she was inappropriate, why mention that? As if, would that add to the story? Would that make it okay what Shechem did to her? And anyway, we know the Torah doesn't even speak badly or disparagingly about a non-kosher animal. So why would the Torah speak badly or disparagingly about Dina, who's the daughter of Yaakov? Like, really, what did she do? It seems so unfair, as if to speak badly about a victim of rape. Totally inappropriate. Furthermore, the Rebbe says, if you take a look at the pasuk, at the verse that speaks about Leah going out, it doesn't say that Leah going out was considered inappropriate. On the contrary, it says Leah going out was considered appropriate. In the words of Rashi, quote, Shehoisa misava umachazeres lahar beshvatim. She was seeking to increase the birth rate. She wanted to bring children into the world. This was not about immodesty. This was about family values. This was about caring and wanting and desiring another pregnancy. Immodest women do not desire pregnancies. They get rid of them. The Rebbe suggests that the traditional way of understanding Rashi is entirely wrong. He says Rashi does not come here in any way, shape, or form to disparage Dina, chas v'shalom. The words of Rashi incidentally come from the Medrash Tanchuma. The Medrash Tanchuma's words are Yetzonis Bas Yetzonis, a forward daughter of a forward woman. Leah was a Yotzah l'kras Yaakov. It says Vateitzer Leah. Here it says the words Vateitzer Dina. But you know the Rashi develops it. He says Ki imo kibita. This is the mashal. This is the metaphor, like mother, like daughter. The Rebbe says that Yotzonis, to go out, is a virtue, not a demerit. A person who wants to influence others will be driven to transcend their own orbit. A person who doesn't care about others will stay in their own private quarters. Why should I be bothered? It's not comfortable to be outgoing. It's not easy to go to a place where nobody knows who you are or likes you or even invited you or asked for you to be there. You think it's easy for Lubavitcher boys at the age of 13, 14, or 15 to ask people on the street if they're Jewish to put on tefillin? I could tell you that it's not easy. And I could tell you that at 47, it's still not easy. I do it. It's not easy. I don't really enjoy it. I enjoy after. I feel very good when I do have somebody who puts on tefillin. That feels good. It's not fun to nudge people. It's not fun to live to be in everybody else's business. It's much more fun to live a private life. Do your own thing. I do my thing. Bug off. Especially when people tell you, bug off. All the time. So why do we do it? You think I have some kind of neurosis? I have some kind of mental illness I cope with that I have to harass people and that gives me my satisfaction? I do it because we had a Rebbe, and the Rebbe wants us to influence people. And the Rebbe taught us the greatest thing we could do is to be mezakeh, to make another Jew meritorious by giving him a mitzvah. And so I want to be a chassid, and as being a chassid, that's what I have to do. And even if I develop an outgoing personality over time, and it becomes second nature, that's not because I'm interested in everybody else's business, it's because I feel a sense of duty to influence others. I don't say I as me as an individual. I'm talking like, that's how Lubavitcher Chassidim are. They're outgoing people. If somebody will say, oh, the Lubavitchers, they're outgoing. They're very forward people. They'll be in your face. They'll be getting you into film like 5 minutes after you meet them. Yeah, that's probably true. Is that a bad thing? I think it's a good thing. That's not a demerit. That's tremendous merit. So when it says that Leah was forward or going out, it's not because Leah was bad. It's because Leah was good. She didn't sit in her corner and say, no, if I get pregnant, I'll get pregnant, but I'm not going to look for this. Who needs the pain, the travail? Leah wanted to have children. She went out of her way. In other words, when Dina went out, Lidais b'bnei sa'aretz, this is not, the Torah is not telling you that Dina went in some juvenile way just to, you know, play with some girls. The Rebbe maintains that Dina wanted to influence. She wanted to influence others. And she didn't go to try to influence the boys. She knew what the boys were like. She didn't want to bother with them. She was a very modest girl. She went specifically to hang out with the girls. Incidentally, there's a Pirkei de Rebbe Lezer that once you see this Pirkei de Rebbe Lezer, you say, well, the Rebbe's Pshat and Rashi has to be so. And it's like you wonder how anybody ever learned Rashi before. The Pirkei de Rebbe Lezer says, he takes a pasuk in Amos that says, he came home and put his hand on the wall and was bitten by a snake. He says, this is the story of Jacob who came to the land of Canaan and was bitten by a snake. Who is the snake? Shechem. Shechem is a snake. And this is what Pirkei de Rebbe Lezer says in chapter 38. He says, Bito shel Yaakov yoshevet ohalim. She was a shy girl. She was like her father in that she hung out at home. And Shechem noticed this. He noticed that she's reticent. She wasn't, you know, like brash. Ma asa Shechem ben Chamor, what did he do? Hevi misachkes naris. He brought a bunch of girls. And he had these girls bring musical instruments, and they were playing and having a good time. And he hoped that Dina would be attracted to these girls, and he would come out, she would come out and try to speak to them, which actually she did, unfortunately for Dina, because then she was abducted and raped. Abarbanel very clearly says, Loi lignai, this is not to disparage Dina, Basleia, but on the contrary. He says, Basleia was Tsunua. Who was the more modest of the two sisters, Rachel or Leah? Yeah. How do you know?
Rachel's the
Where was Leah at the well?
She wasn't at the well.
She wasn't at the well. Correct. Our Barbanel says, who ended up going out there? Rachel did. Who had the more outgoing personality of these identical twins? Rachel. Who was the more homey person, the more shy of the two? Leah was. And furthermore, he says, precisely because Leah was so quiet, Yaakov never really got to know her. And that's why in the first night of marriage, as we talked about in last week's class, he didn't realize that he was with Leah. You look surprised, but you have to be here for last week's class. It's posted. You can watch it online. So the first thing we have to clarify here is that Dina bears absolutely no blame, chas v'shalom, heaven forfend, in this whatsoever. Let's make this very, very clear. We in no way say that she was asking for it, Dina. She was, she put herself in that position. But we don't buy that. That definitely is not a Jewish value, even if there's a lot of Jews in Hollywood who are accused of doing horrible things. That's extremely un-Jewish behavior. Untorah behavior. So Dina goes out and she has these good intentions. She wants to influence other people. Shechem, the son of Chamor, sees her. He's a Chivite. He is Nasi Haaretz. He is the chief of the region. Power corrupts. Absolute power. Powerful guy. Sees this girl. And he decides to abduct her. Vayikach Isa. Vayikach means he took her. He took her, like somebody who takes something. That's not his. He took somebody. Vayishkav, and he lied with her, which is a nice way of saying he raped her. Vayaneha, and he abused her. So the question becomes, what is the difference between Vayishkav and Vayaneha? Is rape not abuse? What's the difference between rape and abuse? Why does the Torah use two words? And pointedly, the Torah says, Vayishkav oisa, vayaneha. He raped her and abused her. So Rashi says that on a very literal level, it means that this Shechem ben Chamor was basically a pervert, sexual predator. And Baalea, Vayishkav oisa means Baalea kadarka. He had normal intimacy. Vayaneha shalei kadarka. Whether that means anal intimacy or other forms of intimacy or other forms of abuse, he abused her in a variety of ways. So we're not talking about a nice man. We're talking about a beast, talking about a sexual predator who abducted a young girl and abused her in multiple ways. So demeaned her and abused her. All those horrible things they talk about, it happened to Dina. That's pretty bad. Interestingly, with regard to the idea of Vayaneha, and he abused her, the Emek Dover goes on to say something very, very much ahead of his time. He says that the Inui, that the abuse was also mental and emotional. He said to her, nobody's ever going to marry you now after you've been victimized. You're a slut. You're a lowlife now. You're a rape victim. So this great-grandfather of those nice ISIS people who are busy being welcomed back into Canada, this is what he did. This is what he did. Ramban says something very interesting. He says, you should know that the Torah is telling you that any kind of intimacy which is forced is abuse. Pretty interesting. Ramban's writing this 800 years ago, living in Arab Spain, in Muslim Spain, or maybe Christian Spain he lived in, actually. At that time, it was Christian. It was certainly a time when women had no rights. And he says, any kind of forced intimacy is abuse. So it's almost like the Torah says, Vayishka Vaisa. It wasn't like she wanted it. No, Vayaneha. This was rape. This was abuse. And then, like a nice rapist, Vatidbak Nafshe Bedina. Then he became very attached to her. And was Dina Bas Yaakov. And the Sephardim says, now he got excited about her lineage. He thought, she's like a princess too. She comes from a fancy household. So it wasn't just a one-off, then throw her in the street. No, he decided he wants her. He wants a Vayev Anara. He loved the girl. Vayedaber Alev Anara. He used all kinds of coaxing and sweet-talking Dina. And it even seems like from the Mefarshim that Dina developed what we call in today's day and age Stockholm syndrome, that she almost took pity on her abuser because he abused her to the point that she was a victim of mental abuse and emotional abuse, not only sexual abuse. And she thought of herself as worthless because of what happened.
Do you know how old she was then?
Yeah, she was a little girl. I think, if my memory doesn't fail me, like 9 years old. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Maybe more developed than today's 9-year-olds, but like a child. So Shechem says to Chamor, his father, he says to her, you know, I think I want this girl. Kachli es hayalda. Can you maybe buy this girl for me? So it's like a yalda, right? You asked if, how old she is. So that exactly is the point. He didn't look at her as a woman. He looked at her as a child, as a kid. Like the Malbim says, she was like in the jurisdiction of her father. She's just a child. It's not, it doesn't matter what she wants. She doesn't know what she wants. Whatever I want for her, she wants. Buy her. Just pay off the parents, you know. And let me take this baby. Let me take this child. I'll take Elisha. I'll take her as a wife. So the Torah says, V'Yakov Shoma Kitime Es Dina Bitei. Yaakov heard that his daughter Dina was defiled. So what did he do? What would any normal father do when he hears that his daughter is defiled? Freak out? Go crazy? Grab a knife? So the Torah says, Uvon of Hoyo es Mikneo Basada. His sons were not with him. Vehechresh Yaakov. Yaakov was silent. Ad Boyom until they came. So Yaakov, for some reason, is silent until his sons show up.
How many days or, like, what kind of span of time is going on there?
It's a really good question. We don't know with certainty. It seems that on that day they came home.
The same day, like, all this is happening in the span of a day?
Well, yeah, this happened, it seems.
This is after or before Yosef was sold?
This is before Yosef was sold.
Before.
Yeah, significantly before. The Or HaChaim says, Ad Boyom, till they came, means that he actually sent for them. In other words, Yaakov wanted his sons with him. He didn't feel comfortable dealing with this by himself. He was quiet because he didn't feel comfortable. But how do we understand his silence? So the Abarbanel says, Yaakov was not going to take this lying down. He wasn't going to do nothing. He was going to do something. But he didn't want to react in anger. And he didn't want to react alone. He wanted his son's counsel. To the son's counsel. He wanted to speak to his sons. He felt he needed others with him. Now the Emek Davar gives us insight into the personality of this father who seems to be indifferent to his daughter. He said, would this have been in the middle of the act, Yaakov would have risked his life to save his daughter. If he would hear his daughter was abducted, that she was in danger, he would have done anything possible to save his daughter. However, the Emek Davar says, at this point, saving Dina was no longer an option. At least saving her from rape was no longer an option. It was after the incident. And because it was after the incident, Yaakov thought that if he would go single-handedly and try to do something, that he would be lynched by a mob from the city. And as one person, he stood no chance of being able to deal with a set of circumstances that were beyond the power of an individual. He felt he needed other people's help. He needed to go. He needed a show of power, a show of force, which actually makes sense. What it tells you is Yaakov, not that Yaakov is not indifferent, but Yaakov is very calculated. So far what we know is that something terrible happened. The Torah does not in any way shift blame to Dina. On the contrary, it's a tragic situation. Dina wanted to do something good, and something bad ended up as a result. And Yaakov Avinu wants to do something. He wants to do something. He's just not sure what he's going to do. He is going to do something. Or Chaim says, Ad Boyom, he sent for his sons. So they came. You asked them how many days? I would presume that day. Sent for his sons. They came that day. Abarbanel says he wants to speak to his sons. What's the deal with this? So Yaakov's sons, it seems, at some point arrive. But perhaps even before they come, verse 6 tells us, Vayetze Chamor Avi Shechem El Yaakov L'daber Ito. Chamor, the father of Shechem, goes to speak to Yaakov. Now, your son commits an act of rape. What do you do about it? What does a normal parent do when their son is guilty of raping or abusing another person? Turn him into the police? Rebuke them? Set the girl free? What does the father of this rapist do? He actively aids, abets, and supports his son in the crime. The man raped a woman, a child actually, so he's a child abuser, raped like a teenager, equivalent of a teenager today. The father doesn't say, let the girl go home. The father has the chutzpah to show up to Yaakov to speak to him. Go speak to your son. Go deal with this monster you raised. No, the father's okay. That's nice. He comes to speak to Yaakov. What did he want to speak to Yaakov about? So the Sepharno says, he thought Yaakov must be really angry because he's not responding. I better go defuse the situation. In other words, he didn't go to try to deal with the situation or free this young lady. He left the young woman abducted. She can't leave. She's captive now. And he went to defuse the situation so the old man doesn't go crazy. In the meantime, Uvnei Yaakov bo ben asada. Luckily, Yaakov's children now come back from the field. You need to look inside because everything is so exacted. The Torah tells us so much in so little words. Kishamam, when they heard, because Yaakov sent for them, obviously he sent them a message, such and such has happened. They come from the field, Kishamam, vayis'atzvu. They're aggrieved. The word etzev is like almost depression. Deeply, deeply pained. Vayis'atzvu hanashim. And then the Torah says, vayichar lahem. That after they were aggrieved or depressed or angered, then they were angered. Vayichar is angered. Vayichar lahem, me'oid, exceedingly, were intensely incensed, very angry. So the obvious question is, why does the Torah divide their feelings? They seem to be experiencing two kinds of feelings, a feeling of deep sadness, a feeling of deep pain, and then separately, a feeling of deep anger. So the Ravam says, so what did the Rishonim? He says that sadness does not beget revenge. Sadness just begets sadness. Depression actually freezes you. It's an inhibitor. People don't act out of depression. They fall into melancholy. They do nothing out of depression. They feel deep shame, deep sorrow. Depression breaks people. So that's why it says, Vayisyatzvu ha'anoshim. In other words, Rabbam says, these people were broken. The news they heard broke them. Then it says, Vayichar lahem. Out of anger, what do people do? They act out of anger. That's what happens. Anger is something that incites behavior. You know that famous bumper sticker, t-shirt, and baseball hat, and probably Facebook meme by now? I don't get mad, I get even. The point is, I'm going to channel my anger and do something about it. I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying that's how people speak because that's the nature of getting angry. That getting angry is people challenge the anger into some kind of vengeance. So now you know that A, Dina's brothers cared very much about her. They were very much broken. They felt her pain. But on the other hand, they were not powerless. They were very angry. So Yaakov is going to do something about this. His sons are fuming. They're going to do something about this. And the reason they're so angry, ki nevala asa b'Yisrael, because they're angry with righteous indignation. And they're angry because a terrible thing, an outrage, has been committed in Israel. Lishkav as Basdina to rape the Yaakov, rape the daughter of Yaakov. V'chein lo ye oseh, and so should not be done. Oh, that's nice. You mean the Torah doesn't believe in rape? What does it mean? V'chein, v'chein lo ye oseh, and so should not be done. So Rashi tells us v'chein lo ye oseh means that this was not done. That in the nations of the world, forget the Jewish etiquette or moralities or ethics. In the world, such a thing wasn't done. Rape was not considered okay. Wasn't considered okay, especially la neses absulis, especially a rape in which Dina was deflowered.
Rabbi, didn't you refer to Esav as a rapist?
I did refer to Esav as a rapist. He's very sadly a Jewish Hollywood fellow.
So, but there is precedent.
There's precedent of Esav being a terrible criminal. He was more of a seducer than a rapist, to be exact. Esav was a man who seduced women on a regular basis, a womanizer who seduced them. His rape was not by the point of the sword. Mm-hmm. Probably not so different than Harvey Weinstein-style rape. Mm-hmm. Okay. That style. But as a rule, this behavior was considered to be inappropriate. This was considered bad behavior. Why? The nations of the world had kept certain things, certain walls, they had remained standing. Certain fences had remained in place from the days of the Mabul. And one of those fences that had remained in place from the days of the Mabul was that there was this notion of rape or abuse of woman was not widely practiced. It was considered to be taboo behavior. We actually see this with regard to Avram Avinu, who's going down into the land of Mitzrayim, and he says to Sarah Imenu, say you're my sister, so they don't kill me. What a strange logic. Say you're my sister, so they don't kill me? So we learned about this. So it's very simple. They would not violate a married woman. They would simply make her into a widow. It would be an accident. You know, I don't know, some things fell from a third-story floor. It happened to land on this poor guy's head. So sad. We're very sorry, lady, your husband's dead. Now let's get on with business. So, and then they would try to win her over, so to speak. This is then a major breach in the mores of society. And who does the major breach happen with? The only Jewish girl in the world. The first Jewish girl in the world. The first woman born Jewish is Dina Bas Yaakov. And where does all the decency and etiquette go out the window? The first Jewish woman, the only Jewish woman in the world alive at the time. It's beyond tragic. This infuriated them. Like, not only we're not the light unto the nations, not only we're not the ones who are preaching and teaching morality and decency, it's through our family that decency is destroyed altogether. It's like, it's unbelievable. Their heads are exploding. And this is acceptable behavior. Because if Shechem does this, and he gets away with it because his father Hamor is so proud of his rapist son that he goes to negotiate on his behalf, and you're soon going to see the whole city, they're into this. They're supportive. They don't demand that something should be done about their leader. They're supportive of him. And he raped one of theirs. Maybe they wouldn't be so supportive. Hey, he raped a Jewish girl. That's okay. So what happens now? What happens is that Vayidaber Chamor Itam, Chamor comes to them and he says, listen, I want to talk to you. Shechem Bini, you know my nice crown prince? My Yiziskite, you know? Nice boy. He really loves your daughter. He fell in love with her. Doesn't say, my son is a rapist, my son is a monster, my son abducted your daughter and violated her. No, he says, my son fell in love with your daughter. So, can you please give her as a wife? Totally ignoring the situation. Not an ounce of responsibility, not an ounce of remorse, not an ounce of care or concern. What's the problem? Is there an issue? We're here to negotiate. We'd like to arrange a marriage. We'll make it a very nice marriage.
Why did he need Yaakov's consent or permission?
Why did he need Yaakov's... You know, Shechem doesn't want to walk around forever as a rapist. Now he wants to first rape and then get away with it, and then cleanse himself. I'm not a rapist. Well, negotiate it. Paid. I'll pay whatever it costs. Listen to the next pasuk. And he says... Tnuah sala liisha, give your daughter to my son as a wife. V'ischatnoi sonu, we're going to marry bnei seichem. We'll marry your daughters. Bnei seichem titnu lanu, you'll give us your daughters, as if you'll maintain control. If you like us, if you think give us your daughters. V'ez bnei seinu tikhu lechem, you can take our daughters. And you're in the driver's seat. We're not going to, you know, if you don't want us to marry any of your daughters, we would never do anything. You can take as you please. Watch, think, listen to those words and remember them carefully. He speaks to Yaakov and his sons, putting them in the driver's seat, giving them this sweet deal. Sweet deal. It's going to be great. V'itanu teshevon. You know what? This can be great. It's going to be great to live amongst us. V'aretz tihiyu lifneichem. The land will be open before you. And shvu, you can settle it. Uscharua, and you can do business in it. V'heyachzuba, you can have holdings. It's going to be great. Let's have a nice party. We're going to get together. Yaakov hasn't responded yet. This is like literally to pour salt in the wounds, to add injury to abuse. Came and raped a daughter. Where's my daughter? He said, well, we're not going to talk about your daughter is. Let's talk about the marriage. We're going to have a negotiation now because my son Shechem, he loves your daughter. This is insane. What's going on over here? You didn't bring my daughter home. You didn't acknowledge it was a crime. You didn't acknowledge any guilt. Well, you just came along and said everything is happy-go-lucky, hunky-dory. Let's have a little negotiation. Now, that's not enough. In verse 11, Shechem, the little bastard, the little rapist himself, he pipes up. Vayoyimer Shechem al Avia. Shechem says to her father, Ve'lachem to her brothers, Emtzachem be'inechem. He says, I'd really like you to, I hope you'll like me. I want to find favor in your eyes, he says. So, because I want to find favor in your eyes, name your price. I know you're just Jews, you just want money anyway. So just name your price. And then we can be friends. You can like me. I'll pay you off. Put yourself in Yaakov's shoes. Put yourself in the son's shoes. It shouldn't be so hard to imagine. This is an easy human emotion to imagine. Think about what's just happened. And think about the unbelievable, unmitigated chutzpah of what's unfolding before your eyes. Where is Dina? Now you're fighting a government. The king, crown prince, a city. No outcry in the city. Everybody seems fine. The king is fine with it. What would you think? What would you think as a thinking person? Okay, what are we going to do over here?
They're rotten to the core.
Huh?
They're rotten to the core.
Rotten to the core, but like we're going to... You can't say, give me my daughter. They're not giving you your daughter. They made it very clear that's not one of the options. They didn't say, would you like Dina back? We can bring her back to you. She's a little bit bloody and beaten, but we can bring her back to you. Or, you know, maybe there's a better option. Maybe she could stay with us. Or maybe we can bring her home and then we'll have a marriage later. That was never on the table. There was never an offer to bring Dina home. The offer was, what's your price? We'll pay you off. Forget it was a rape. Don't, let's not talk about that. Let's move on. Let's not sweat the small stuff, please. And then this mechutzef, this unbelievable, unmitigated gall, the Eitzar HaMefarsh HaMedrashim says, you see, Shechem chotzefaya. See, he was just like, he was an insolent boy besides being a rapist. He's just an insolent person. Your father is speaking, he's the king. He made an offer. He didn't get a response yet. Who asked you to mix in? Who does this? And he says more. He's not finished. Shame? Embarrassment? Guilt? He feels great. He's so happy about himself. Harbolai. They're looking at him in Estonian silence. He's like, what is some kind of issue over here? He says, go ahead. Harbolai maid. Demand of me a high figure. Vatena, money is not an issue. No problem. Kashatimra lai, you name it, I give it. Snuli esanara, just give me the girl, make it official. You agree, she should be my wife, and that's all. This is called being between a rock and a hard spot. What do you do now? Now you see who you're dealing with. What do you do? This is a premeditated rape. This is not a guy who said, I was overcome, I'm just a man, what should I do? She was this and that was, she came into my room. He sets her up. He saw her from a distance. He set her up. He put the girls there. He set up the crime scene, swooped in, abducted her, raped her, in every way abused her, tormented her mentally, emotionally, physically, sexually. And then, without a moment of shame, he's here to negotiate. Bringing Dina home, you notice, is not an option. So Shechem, Yaakov's children answer Shechem and Chamor, they answer them b'mirma. What does mirma mean in modern Hebrew? Mirma in modern Hebrew means with deceit. With deceit. What does it mean with deceit? Deceit. Yaakov and his sons are guilty of deceit. Deceit, it's like a business deal. They're trying to skank the guy for a few bucks. Deceit. The daughter, their sister, was abducted and violently raped. And now, as if nothing had happened, they show up for negotiations. The least you could do, give them some credit. Say deceit. Like, and anyway, why would the Torah tell that to us? So Rashi says, it does not mean in any kind of dishonesty. You know what it means? It means b'chachma. Cunningly. That's what it means. Answer them cunningly. They have no option. There are no options on the table. They don't even know where Dina is. You're sending the commandos to rappel into the roof and get her. They didn't know where she is. She's in an undisclosed location now, somewhere in the palace. So they could either be just angry and foam at the mouth and scream and yell and accomplish nothing, or, despite the fact that they're very broken and even angrier, they say, let's think about this. Keep their wits together. And they answer with incredible cunning. Now, what could be so cunning? So, it's interesting. The Akedah and the Kesef Nivchar and the Bach and many other Mefarshim, they all speak about this. They say, it sounds like Yaakov and his sons, like a bunch of cheaters and liars. They make a deal and don't keep the deal. And they explain that it's actually not true. I'm going to go back to this Kesef Nivchar in a minute to see. Look at their words carefully, and you will see that this is not an act of lying or deceit. This is an act of supreme holiness. They are doing what is necessary to rescue their sister. That's a holy thing to do. I think it's interesting to point out that in Sefer Avos Torah, it says that the Shvatim, if you count up all the words spoken by the Shvatim, throughout the entirety of the Torah, you end up with 1,820 words. So why is that relevant? Because the name of God shows up 1,820 times in the Torah. And the idea here is that the words of the Shvatim are part of Torah. This is not a pack of lies. This is not a collection of indecencies committed by our forefathers and by the Shvatim. The words that they said were words of holiness and words of loyalty to Hashem. Interestingly, there's even a suggestion that the words of Yaakov and Leah and Rachel altogether also end up at 1820. That's how many words. I'm just saying, it's not, you say, oh, the Shvatim, bunch of liars and cheaters. They said one thing, they did something else. If you don't do this whole background, say, but look at these guys. He came and he made an offer. He's a fair guy. So make your price, whatever you want. And they lied to him. They said, circumcise yourself. And then they killed him. It's not the case. So the answer b'mirma, the Chizkuni, he says something. He expounds here on Rashi. He says like this. He says, b'mirma is Shishalu lehima kol zachar. What they asked? They asked of him, they said, we want all the males circumcised. What were they thinking, Yaakov's sons? What were they thinking? Did they plan to kill everybody? Was this a planned massacre? Is that what they wanted to do? Get everybody into a weak, defenseless position and go kill everybody? Says the Chizkuni, absolutely not. That was not the cunning. That's not cunning. The cunning was that Yaakov's children reasoned that there's no way that Shechem and Hamor are going to have a bris milah. They're not going to do that. So Shechem and Hamor presented themselves as reasonable, So Yaakov says, we also present this as reasonable. So we have a reasonable request. I said, well, that's very nice. I understand you want to marry a daughter. Yeah, but we can't do that because, you know, for us, a foreskin is really, it's a shame and it wouldn't be appropriate for us. And even if they would agree, he says, there's no way a whole city is going to agree to this. Shechem is going to come back to the city and say, listen, guys, I want you all to go and cut off. And they said, what? Why would we do that? And Shechem said, well, you know, I kind of raped this girl, but I don't want it to look bad. I want to like make it official. So because you're a rapist and you want to make it official and their family don't make it official, let's say we should cut off. Really? Like Yaakov's children reasoned this was never going to work. Because they came and offered. So no, you're going to be one nation. You're going to have holdings. We're going to do business together. You're going to settle. They said, yeah, you know, we'd love that. It's such a nice offer you made us. We're so pleased to get into this relationship with you. So nice to meet you, sir. Beautiful. But here's the little problem. In order to be one nation with us, you need to be circumcised. And then they would come home, and Shechem and Hamor would basically tell everybody what they said, and the people would say, nah, that's not going to happen. And so they have to just give Dina back, and that's all. And then Yaakov's sons will figure out some way to get avenge Dina. But the first thing is not vengeance. What's the first thing?
Get her back.
Get her back, for heaven's sake! That was a brilliant move. It was a brilliant move. They gave him a deal they never could have accepted. They never imagined they would accept it. A nation would be supportive of a rapist? Who would go and cut off his foreskin to support a rapist? You have to be Meshuga. Because he wants to have a good time and rape somebody that I have to, like, supposedly it diminishes the pleasure of that area and so on and so. Who wants to do that? Anyway, it's just darn uncomfortable. And what do they say? So this is the deal. It's B'mirma. They answer very, very wisely, very cunningly. Vayidabru, they speak Ashatima as Dini Achaisim. They speak to the man who had violated the sister Dina.
But it was also very risky to do that because the whole community was supporting them to begin with.
Well, it wasn't really a risky thing to do because the chances of everybody supporting them was like nil. Well, so they thought. They thought there's no way that people are going to go along with this. That was a very clever thing to say, actually. But sometimes you do very clever things, but it doesn't go the way you expected it. It backfired. And then Yaakov's sons really had a problem. So they said to him, we can't, first of all, why does it say Ashatima is Dime Achaisim? Why does the Pasuk emphasize? What do you think, we have amnesia? We forgot from two Pesukim ago what happened? The Torah has to remind us every two Pesukim? They spoke to the man who raped Dina. I know, it says it six verses ago, he raped Dina and he abused her. Why do you have to tell me again? You have to rub it in? So Rashi says, you know why it says, Vayidabru es Ashatima is Dina Dima Avim? Because what do you say? Oh, B'mirma, Rashi is twisting it. B'mirma means they lied, it was a cheating thing. Rashi twists it to make the rabbis look good and make Jews look good. He says it was a cunning thing. No, Ashatima. Hakosov Oimer, Rashi explains to you why he's forced to say that what Dina's brother said was right and good, because who were they talking to? A reasonable person? A mensch? They're talking to a monster, a sexual predator. This is not a lie, this is not a cheat. This man raped his sister. And he didn't bring her back. What are you going to do? So they said to him, it's a beautiful deal. We'd love to do this, my friend, but we can't. We can't give our sister to a man who's got a foreskin. It's a shame for us. It's too shameful for us. But, he said, this might work. This might work, he says. Here's where we'll give her, we can consent. If you'll be like us, that every single male amongst you will be circumcised. They didn't say, see, here's the thing. He said, we can't give our sister to a man who's not circumcised. So what would he say? Okay, I'll circumcise myself. They never said that. They said, we can't give our sister to a person who has an arla, but here's how we could. If everybody were to circumcise themselves, and then, v'nasanu es b'nei seinu lachem, then we can give you our daughters. Then we can take your daughters. In other words, giving them back their argument. You say we're going to be the driver's seat, right? We love it. It's a great plan. We'll be happy to take your daughters and we'll give you our daughters should we be interested, but that's only if first you're like us. So you'll be circumcised. V'yashavnu itchem, then we could sit with you and then we can have a wonderful relationship.
Is Yaakov involved in this conversation too?
You know what? You know what? It doesn't mention Yaakov saying a word. Yaakov, very interestingly, seems not to have been as cunning as his sons here. It seems Yaakov didn't know what to do. He was quiet till his sons came. He wanted their counsel. He wanted them with him. And then when they were with him, they were speaking, not Yaakov. It's very interesting. Yaakov doesn't speak. Now, Yaakov, if he was against this, he should have said, no, 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 guys, stop it. I don't like this. Could have overridden them. He doesn't. And said, no, then we can make this happen. Yeah, this can be nice. And if you won't listen to us, Lehimel, to all get circumcised, we'd like to take our daughter Vahalachnu and have a nice day. Reasonable? Just give us back our daughter. You never offered that, but we're taking that. So you have a great, you offered us a great deal. We love it. It's fantastic. If you all get circumcised, thinking to themselves, they're never doing this. So here's the other part. The rest of the deal is no deal. We're out of here. We don't want to be with you. Clearly you don't want to be with us. You don't want to live our kind of life. That's fine. Shockingly, Vayitvu Divrei Beinei Chamer, the king says, that's a great idea. Why did I never think of getting circumcised? Such a gewaldic and beautiful thing. Ooh. He says, look. And Beinei Shechem, Shechem says, yeah, Dad, wow, imagine we could get circumcised. This is great. This is great. The Shvatim are shocked. It's Meshugarim, lunatics. Grown men want to get circumcised. Why in heaven they want this? He didn't stop them. The young lad doesn't stop for a minute. And he gets everybody to do this. Kichofetz of Vas Yaakov. He was so infatuated with Yaakov. This, he makes everybody crazy. He was so respected, he doesn't delay in carrying this out. The Medrash tells us there was one guy who didn't want to do it. And they went after him. The whole city went after him. And there was a few women who hid their baby sons, and they went after them. And they went and circumcised the babies. And they went right back to the city. And they said, listen, guys, we have a great deal for you. We're so happy to bring you the news. The good people. They're not here. They're not warring people. They're good people in Matanu. They're at peace with us. And it's all going to be good. This is, we're going to allow them to live. They're going to live in our land. They're going to do business over here. And don't worry about it. It's a big land. There's more supply than demand. It doesn't matter. There's plenty. Don't worry about it, guys. The economy will not be in danger at all. At all. It will not adversely affect the economy. So this is the first thing everybody's interested in. The first thing everybody's hear about, money. First thing I talked about. Don't worry about it. Your businesses are safe. Oh, and not businesses are safe. And not only that, but Miknei and Vikinyan and V'chol Behenta Halil Lonohim. And they said, you know, first they said, look inside carefully over here, chapter 34, verse 22. Verse 21, it says, "Bnoisam nikach lanu will take their daughters. Ves bnoisenu nitan lema will give them our daughters." You notice a little change. Who is dishonest here? Shechem and Hamar are selling a deal to the people in their city by lying to them, by telling them something that's simply not true. And then he says, "You know what, guys? All they want from us to live with us." They have one little condition that they'll consent to this. To be for a nation. You got to make a little contribution. You just give it that. Circumcised, like they're circumcised, and everything. The rest is cool. And then he says, after this condition, they're going to be living amongst us. We'll own everything anyway. Their livestock, their possessions, their animals will all become ours in the end. We'll get rid of the Jewish problem. We'll phase them out. Who's lying? Who's deceitful here?
To the colors, that's for sure.
Here's the conversations. Here's what they told Yaakov and his sons. Here's what they told the people. outright liars. Incredulously, they listened. Kol b'nei kol yetzir shariri, all the people. V'yumelu kol zachar. Honestly, I can't even understand what they did. A pure lunacy. They went and got all circumcised. Now they're in trouble. Now what do you do? All Yaakov and his sons wanted was to get the sister home. Get the poor girl home. Nurse her back to health. Make a mensch out of her again. We'll figure out what to do with these people. The first thing of order of business is protect the victim. Nothing doing. These lunatics just went and circumcised themselves. So now, the plan failed. What do you do now?
Give him another condition.
Give him a condition? You can't give him another condition. They did your condition. First of all, once they did that, they'll probably do anything. The condition has to make some kind of sense. And anyway, you can't go back and say, oh, we forgot. We said your foreskin, cut off the edge of your nose too. You have to go take Dina now. The whole purpose was to get Dina. We have to go get Dina. Are you with me so far? Have Yaakov's sons done anything inappropriate so far? What we have here so far is a rapist, a family that's supportive, and ultimately an entire city or province that's willing to circumcise themselves to protect the rapist. This is a sick society. A society that doesn't rein in the man who rapes a child and instead supports him and is ready to go through pain to support him. It does seem at this point that Yaakov is at a loss for what to do. It seems he doesn't know what to do. And on the third day, like the Ma'am Loya says, as we heard from so many, we know already from the story of Avraham Avinu, because everything in this Bible is layered. When was Avraham's most pain? On the third day. Although the Chizkuni maintains that there were so many people in the city, he says, B'yem HaShlishi, everybody was in pain. But then he says something else. The Chizkuni says, Lama B'yem HaShlishi? Because B'yem Echad Liyaspiku Anshiyayir. They couldn't all get circumcised. It wasn't like a... They didn't have a huge supply of medical professionals. It took time. These crazy people were spent 3 days circumcising the whole city. They went from house to house circumcising everybody. So the Shvatim were monitoring this, and by the time, everybody circumcised, the third day. So now that everybody's circumcised, what's the assumption?
They're hurting.
If they're hurting, what can Yaakov's sons do now?
Take Dina.
Now you can go take Dina. It's so far, everything makes perfect sense. It's a perfectly laid plan. But once again, the perfectly laid plan fails. Vayhi b'yayim ha'shlishi, came the third day, b'yayisim koev, and they're in pain. Vayikhu shnei b'nei Yaakov, the two sons of Yaakov, Shimon and Levi, achei Dina, the brothers of Dina, ish charbay, they took their swords. Vayavoyu ala'ir betach, they came to the city with great confidence. The Torah says, Vayargu kol zachar. They killed all the males.
Were there only two of them, Shimon and Levi?
Shimon and Levi. Nobody else there?
They didn't have an entourage.
Well, there's a lot of questions now. First of all, why is it just Shimon and Levi? How come anybody else didn't go along with this?
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. In Judaism, bar mitzvah is a good thing or a bad thing?
Bar mitzvah.
Probably a good thing, right? What if I tell you that the source for bar mitzvah, meaning son of mitzvah, literally, euphemistically responsible for mitzvahs, that the source of that being at age 13 comes from?
Shimon and Levi.
Because Shimon and Levi were less than 12 months apart. They're like 10 and a half months apart. Leah got pregnant right away again. So they were both bar mitzvah at this point. And how does this Torah describe them?
They were
13
years old.
13 years old.
That's it?
That's it. Which gives you the idea that Dina's like 9 years old. That's it, 30 years old. What does it say? Ish charbay. Each one, if it took his sword. What is an ish? An ish is a major, a grown-up. So Rashi quotes our sages, both in Masechet Avot, as well as in Masechet Nazir, on page 29. And we hear, that's in the Pirkei Avos, where it says, Ben Shleishah Seh Lemitzvahs. Rashi tells us this. I don't want to go into it. There's a whole long arichas of the calculation of how we know they were 13 years old. But we know they were 13 years old. That's a subject for another day. How did we know they were 13 years old? Just suffice it to say, we knew they're 13. There's a long reshima even from the Rebbe. The Rebbe once wrote a whole notation about this, knowing how they're 13. So according to many major Rishonim, the idea of bar mitzvah is learned from Shimon Levi. From what, doing a sin? It's bar avera or bar mitzvah?
Bar mitzvah.
Bar mitzvah. Now it's true that bar mitzvah is also bar avera. Because if you could be responsible for mitzvahs, that means you're also going to become responsible for averis. But we don't say Shimon and Levi were the world's first bal avera, being responsible for their sin they did, because they were responsible for being a bar mitzvah. What was the mitzvah? The mitzvah was they rescued a Jewish girl. The daughter was taken. The sister was taken. And there's no way to get her out. Because these monsters weren't letting her go. That's a bar mitzvah. A bar mitzvah means to be responsible. To be responsible for the welfare of another one. As a Jewish girl in captivity, then to be a bar mitzvah means to take responsibility for it. And not just to take responsibility for it, but to be ready to risk your life for it.
How come Reuven wasn't involved? He was the
oldest. It's a really good question. How come Reuven wasn't involved? And the Mefarshim tell us that the brothers were afraid. They were afraid. They were afraid to do this. Everybody's afraid. It's a scary thing to do. And Shimon and Levi had guts. So let's make a cheshbon over here. Reuven, Shimon, Levi. Reuven was timid. Shimon and Levi are bar mitzvah. The rest of the kids, they're not even bar mitzvah. And you want a bunch of kids to go? The only adults in the house, so to speak, from a Jewish perspective, are Shimon and Levi. Reuven's timid. So Shimon and Levi decided we're going to do this. There is no other adults in the house. Which makes you think that when Yaakov was waiting for his sons, who was he waiting for? A bunch of kids? It was anyway for Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. The rest of them were small children. Interesting, the Mefarshim talk about this idea that why were the sons not with Yaakov? How come Yaakov was alone when this happened? And because he was alone when it happened, he had to go send for his sons. So the Medrash Seichel Tov says that Yaakov's sons excelled in the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim. And maybe it's after they dropped the ball last time around and Yaakov was left alone and attacked by the angel. So they said to his father, Dad, stay home. We'll take care of the sheep. Big boys. We'll do it. You sit this one out. And Yaakov waits for them. I mean, the logic will tell you that he waited for who? Reuven, Shimon, Levi. That's what logic tells you. Yisachar and Zvilna, little boys. Everybody's 11, 10, 9, 8 years old. Okay. So, Shimon and Levi go to the city and kill everybody. And like everything in the Chumash, there's got to be like a little bit more to the story. Just go and kill everybody? Like what happened over here? And then in verse 26 it says, Ve'es Chamor ve'es Shechem b'nai hargu lufi charev. Chamor and Shechem, his son, they killed by the sword. Now, something doesn't make any sense over here. They first killed the whole city, then they killed Chamor, then they killed Shechem, and then Vayikru es Dina. Why did they kill everybody? I mean, the troublemaker was Chamor and Shechem. He should go kill Shechem first. Even his father, he didn't rape anybody. He defended a rapist. That's bad. What do you have to kill him for? Shouldn't the order of avenging this, if they were seeking to avenge a crime, shouldn't the order have been to go after the perpetrator of the crime? It's just like bloodthirsty. Just go kill everybody? What happened here? Something doesn't make any sense. Something's not adding up. So, the reason that it happens in this order, our sages tell us, is because Shechem and his son were terrified of Shimon HaLevi. And they hid in a tower, in a tower of the palace. And what happened here was, the Or HaChaim says, Shimon and Levi intended to rescue Dinah. This was a rescue mission, not a massacre mission. They came to get Dinah. They couldn't find Dinah. They found that Dinah was locked up. But Shechem and Chamor, as soon as Shechem found out that they were... So the people tried to stop them. And Shimon and Levi said, out of my way! And they said, no, over our dead bodies. Shimon and Levi said, if you insist. In other words, they didn't come to kill them. The reason they killed them was because they had no choice. The Or HaChaim says, this was a classic example of a rescue mission gone wrong. A rescue mission in which they came to get Dinah, and they couldn't get Dinah because they were being stopped by these people. So you can ask, how do two 13-year-old boys fight off adults? Well, the adults had a bris 3 days ago. It's not so hard to fight them off. They were strong and agile and skilled. And these people were severely hampered.
Why does it say about that? So it's almost like they took into account that they were weak.
Absolutely.
Or just for rescuing?
Absolutely for rescue. Absolutely. Was that the purpose to begin with, to massacre everybody? They said clearly, either you do the bris milah or give us back our daughter. The idiot said, we'll do a bris milah. The Kli Yakar says something which is like, it's borderline tragic. It's like, you almost it's so sarcastic, you almost want to cry. He says, how come they were so confident of their success? This is simple. Everybody just had a bris milah. You can't fight when you're dealing with a bris milah. So the Kli Yakar says, no. The problem was they would set off an alarm. And other people, the neighboring cities, would come help them. The Kli Yakar says, they said, nobody's going to come help them. They're all circumcised already. They wrote them off as Jews. Nobody will help. Nobody helps the Jews in their need, in their hour of need. Nobody will come help the city. It's like sad. The Kli Yakar says, that's what they were so confident. Rashi actually says that the reason they were so confident was because... Let's take a look in Rashi. First of all, the verse calls them, it was the Shnei Bnei Yaakov. Why do we have to talk Shnei Bnei Yaakov? Bonov Hayu, they were his children, but Nagu Atzmam Shimon Velevi Kishara Noshim. They didn't act like children. Why? You finish the sentence. They should have acted like children of Yaakov. Why? And they should, what should they, what didn't they do or what should they have done? What should they have not done? Well, the typical person would say, and they shouldn't have killed the people. Sorry, that's not what Rashi says. He says, v'leinotlu eitzohimenu. They didn't check with their dad. They acted unilaterally. In other words, the Torah criticizes them for not planning this out with their father. And it's quite possible that they were convinced that Yaakov would not have sanctioned their actions because you'd be afraid. Because Yaakov was afraid. Yaakov was afraid of confronting Esav. The Rashbam says that the angel that came to argue with Esav was because to make sure Yaakov doesn't run away the day before. Yaakov didn't look for confrontations. He spent his whole life running away from confrontations. He had a problem with Esav, he ran to Haran. He had a problem with the people, he said, let me wait till my kids come home. When Shechem and Chamor are making these arguments, Yaakov Avinu never speaks even. So Shimon and Levi said, we're going to talk to Dad about this. He's going to tell us it's too dangerous. They said, we just need to do this. Yaakov was not pleased about it. And the truth is that that wasn't respectful, and they should have known that Yaakov wouldn't leave Dinah alone. Yaakov would have worked with them. Okay, they're kids. They're 13-year-old kids. They were brash, and they said, this is not going to go down. So they went and did what they did. Achei Dinah, why? Lefisha Masru Atzman Aleha. They were ready to risk their lives for her. So what did they go for? They went to kill everybody, or they went to rescue Dinah?
But you said in the beginning about whether this was a question of if it's sanctioned or not.
I'm going to get to the sanction in a minute. Did they spill innocent blood? Did they kill innocent people?
Because we have to assume that they all took up arms against them.
But you have to assume they took up arms against them, but that they weren't very capable of arms because they just had a circumcision. So like Rashi says, they're called the brothers of Dinah because they're ready to risk their lives for Dinah. What was this all about? An act of murder? An act of massacre? An act of brutality? What motivated Shimon and Levi?
But their sister,
get our sister back. And they were sure, betach, very confident. They knew that we this can't go wrong. It was, Reuven said, I'm too afraid. They said, okay, stay home. We're going to do this. Shahayu koyavim. Why? Because the people were in pain. They said, how are they going to fight with us? How are they going to fight with us? The whole surgery. You fight with a hospital? You can't fight with us. Medrash Agada says, betuchim al koychesh leisazakin. You know what they were so secure of? They said, in the end, we have Yaakov behind us. Yaakov would not defend him if he did the wrong thing. Yaakov said, we have Yaakov behind us. So their children were convinced that Yaakov was behind them. And we'll soon see if Yaakov was behind them. Soon see. So the Or HaChaim says there was no choice. And therefore they massacred everybody. Or HaChaim says that the people tried to defend their king with their bodies. Literally. They created a human wall in front of Shechem and Hamar. A human wave. So there was no choice. They killed their way through this human wall. They said, we are not leaving here without our sister. And it was only after they managed to kill the whole city that then they could go after Shechem and finally Hamar and finally Shechem. Because Hamar was busy defending his son Shechem. But they went for the guy. They wanted the perpetrator. But everybody was defending the perpetrator. So they had to kill everybody. And only after Yaru calls up the Eschamar, and finally Veshchem Bnoi Arogu Lefichar of the last one. And then they got to what's called the Matara. What's the purpose? What was the goal of this mission? They took Dinam.
But then they didn't stop. They just started to...
Then they plundered. Why did they plunder? Because Dina was a victim, and she deserved to get paid back. They said they hurt Dina. Now Dina is going to walk away with wealth. Now she's going to get not only that, not only the people who did what they did and defended the ones who did what they did. Now Dina's going to get paid back also. It says they killed the men. The Medrash says there was a group of women who started throwing rocks at them, and they had no choice. They killed some women too. So I want to skip now to verse 30 because this is the key verse here. Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon ve'el Levi. Yaakov says to Shimon and Levi, Acharte Moisi. What does Acharte Moisi mean? Do you hear him say, murderers, you killed people? He doesn't say that. He says, Acharte Moisi. Acharte Moisi means, says Rashi. Take a look at Rashi, see what Acharte means. Loshen Mayim Achurim, muddied waters. In other words, Yaakov said, "Ein dati tzlul achshav. I don't have clarity now. My countenance, my consciousness is muddied. I'm worried about what's going to happen here. I'm worried that now the nations who live in the land of Canaan are going to attack us and massacre us." The Medrash Agada says, "Tzlula hoisa hachavis." At this point, there was a distinction between us and them. They left us alone. We left them alone, and they just didn't bother us. Now you kicked up all the dust, all the sediment. You kicked up a ruckus. What does that mean? Says Rashi, there was a tradition that in the end this land is going back to the Jewish people. The Chamites came and took the land from the Semites. Avraham Avinu is a Semite. The land belongs to the people of Shem. It's going back to Bnei Yaakov. That's the Semites who are going to inherit this land. This is going to become the land of Israel. They knew this. They said, Adasher Tifre, it's still a nation. Now it's just a family. Till this family becomes a nation, we'll deal with it then. Why deal with it now? They were quiet. Why? Because people deal with things that are urgent, not important. That's human nature. As Stephen Covey famously said. Is it urgent? It's not urgent. Someday there'll be a nation. It's not urgent. Right now, what's important? Important now is my next business deal. I deal with the urgent stuff. But now, said Yaakov, they're going to say it's urgent. They're starting. Look what they did to Shechem. And in that case, Yaakov says, how am I going to deal with this? Lahavisheni b'yeshvi ha'aretz. What does it mean, lahavisheni? Lahavisheni means to make me like hated. Make me this is a pariah amongst the people of the land. B'chnani u'b'prizi. V'ani m'say mispar. I'm just a few people. I'm just one man with a little family of kids. V'nesvo alai, they're going to gather against me. V'hikuni v'nishmati ani uvesi. Now be honest with yourself and read the rebuke of Yaakov of verse 30. What did this rebuke say?
The rebuke said, you're not wrong. It's just I'm worried about the consequences.
The rebuke said, I'm worried about the consequences. You have endangered us. I don't see a way out of this. I don't have a strategy now, Yaakov says. Not that Yaakov seemed to have a strategy before either, by the way. But now he says, now I don't have a strategy. I don't know where this is going.
Didn't it occur to Yaakov, though, that the legend or whatever would grow, that don't mess with them because they whacked this whole city?
So it does actually, doesn't occur to Yaakov, but what did they respond? What's their response to Yaakov? This is so critically important to say, Yaakov was angry at them. No, he wasn't. I mean, yes, he was. But he doesn't criticize what they did. He doesn't say, Ratzchim, murderers, look at what you did. You massacred a city. Are you insane? He never says that. What does he say? He says, we don't have a strategy now. We have no exit strategy. We're in this land. We're a tiny group of people. They're all going to gang up on us. We're finished. Till now, we had a strategy. A strategy, we're going to get that. How are we getting our first order of business? We need to get Dina back. Every plan we tried failed. So we're busy figuring out the next move. We don't have now. You are without any kind of strategy, without any rationale, any rhyme or reason. You just went and massacred a city, and now what? Now we're going to go from here. How could Yaakov not care about the innocent blood that was spilled? How could Yaakov not say, "What's going on over here? This is you did a terrible thing." So let me tell you a little secret, my friends. Let me tell you what the Rambam says. And this Rambam is quoted widely by many, many of the Rishonim. The Rambam says in Hilchos Melachim that the reason that the people of Shechem deserved death was because they violated the seven Noahide laws for which the consequence is capital punishment. Quote, Sha'arei Shechem gozal. He stole Dina, which doesn't just mean kidnapping. Sexual abuse is an act of theft. To steal a person's innocence, to steal a person's sexuality, is an act of theft in and of itself. It is a grave violation of the divinely ordained mitzvah of gezel. And what happened? Vehimro, the people saw. Vyadu, they were all well aware of this. Valaydi, no. Anybody take him to task? No, instead they got circumcised like crazy people. Not only they didn't protest, not only they didn't take up the task, they went and agreed with him. They said, this is great, sure, we'll do it. Whatever it takes, master. So the Rambam says, in that case, they forfeited their right to live.
They have a choice of the king may have been a dictator or a ruthless.
A whole country, a whole city against one person? Like they have a choice? Yeah, I don't think he would say circumcise themselves. That's why he wouldn't say even King Jong-un, whatever his name is. He's not stupid. That's stupid. He does what he can get away with.
He did not force them because he told them before, like he gave them reasons why they...
Right, correct, very good. Correct. Your wife is right, correct. He didn't force them. He sold them on it. He said, this is great. We're going to become people. He said, yeah, wow. It's so cool, yeah. And we're going to get their money in the end too. Yeah, we should do this.
And they knew about the rape and so on.
Everybody knew about everything. Yaakov's sons were banking on the fact that the people would give pushback. Nothing. So the Radvaz asks a question on the Rambam. Radvaz says, one second. If it's true what you're saying, Rambam, why does Yaakov Avinu, why does he rebuke them? So the Rebbe answers the question very simply. The Rebbe says that the taina of Yaakov was not with regard to the actual killing. What was the rebuke of Yaakov? Acharta maisi, lavisheni biyeshve oretz. The question here was, you made a chilul Hashem, what will the nation say? They'll say the Jews are a bunch of murderers, they're brutal animals, they go killing people. We don't have a strategy. In other words, even if you say that Yaakov is not just worried about his safety and security, but even if Yaakov was angry about what happened, he said, this is wrong. What was wrong? Yaakov said, it's a chilul Hashem. And the Rebbe says, there's two ways to explain this. Number one, we could understand that Yaakov agreed with his sons that they deserve to die. Besides, they wanted to die, idiots. They put themselves up for it. They could have ran away. Who asked them to go and defend their king? But since Yaakov said the only way to do this was in this cunning fashion, you want to carry out the law? It's vigilante. Vigilante, wait, you can't carry out the law, vigilante, he says. You want to carry out the law, bring him to a court of law. And we see it with the Givonim. The Givonim were people who lied to Moshe Rabbeinu, and nonetheless, despite the fact that we were not duty-bound to honor our agreement, we still honored it. You know why? It doesn't look good. This story doesn't look good. Let's face it. Most of you, before you came to this class an hour and a half ago, you didn't think the story looked very good. Shimon and Levi didn't look good. The natural assumption is Yaakov is angry at them. I don't even have time tonight to go with you the Psukim of Vayichi. If you look what Yaakov curses there, he's angry at their anger. And even the Rebbe even suggests that he's angry, he puts it together with Yosef because he said, I thought you did it only L'shem Shamayim. You didn't just get carried away in anger, but I saw what you did with Yosef, I saw you did get carried away in anger. So you were controlled by anger, and that's an issue and a problem. He never ever rebukes them for the thing they did themselves. Another approach is that in order to stop the Chilul Hashem, so then go out, declare war on them. So we're going to declare war on you because you violated the law. This is a just war, not a holy war. We don't have holy wars. Wars are horrible, but just. It's a moral war. You did the wrong thing, and you're either going to have to deal with this or we're going to deal with it. So the methodology bothered Yaakov. And this is Givaldik now. What does Shimon and Levi answer their father? And what does he answer back? Vayoimru, they said, Hachizayna yasa es achiseinu. Should our sister become, literally it translates as a harlot, but how would that be a harlot? But it would mean, should we treat our sister as if she was a prostitute? What, that the guy came and paid her for her services? And we're supposed to say, yeah, sure, no problem, we take the money and move on? Like, what choice do we have here? Did he offer us to bring our daughter back? And here is the beautiful way that the Bach and the Akedah, the Kesef Nivcha, they say. They say, if you look at the words, Yaakov Avinu's sons never said, if you circumcise yourself, that we will marry you and become one. They never said that. They never said that. If you look, it says, we cannot be with a man who has an arla. And that means even after you take it off, you still have an arla. Like the idea of arelim, or uncircumcised, is a euphemism. That's for non-Jews. They said, le'ish arl. We can't give our sister an ish arl. In other words, afilum yimalatzme. Even if he will have an arla, it's not going to make him ois arl, as the expression goes. An arl is a non-Jew. A mahol is a Jew. He says, you think a Jew is a piece of skin? That makes you a Jew? You have to swear for idolatry. There's mitzvahs you have to do. He said, we never said to them they're going to marry. He said, this wouldn't be nice for us. We could never agree to such a thing. They never said they did agree to it. They never ever said, if you circumcise yourself, then we agree. They never said that. Look in the verses carefully. And they never expected them to agree with it either. And here now, my friends, is the kicker. What is the response of Shimon and Levi? So the Mefarshim tell us something unbelievable. The response of Shimon and Levi was, Dad, you worried about strategy? And if we would have left things, that would be a good strategy. You worried about the safety of our family. And if we wouldn't do anything, and they would do this, then what happens tomorrow? Every Jew's blood is free. You get away with it. There was a famous Nazi hunter. His name was Moshe Friedman, I think his name was. He's not so well known as Simon Wiesenthal, but in the early years he worked even harder than him and he accomplished much more and he had great Mesiras Nefesh. I'm not taking away from Simon Wiesenthal, but this Moshe was a very exceptional person. And at a certain point, his wife, he was so obsessed with going after Nazis that his wife told him, I can't take it anymore. Like either you stop it or I'm getting divorced, because he had no life. And he went to the Rebbe and he asked the Rebbe what he should do. And the Rebbe said that he should find a way to make his marriage work, but the Rebbe said he has to continue what he's doing. The Rebbe said it's very important for historically speaking that the world should know that when somebody did this to Jewish people, that they will be brought to justice. Mm-hmm. It's an important message. They can't walk away. We owe it to the victims. We have to go after them. So what happens if Dina gets raped and abused and then there's a payoff? Or what position, say Shimon and Levi, have we left him? You're worried about being in a dangerous position? And previously, and if we wouldn't respond after what happened previously, would we be in a better position? They can get away with it. If they can get away with it, then they'll do it. It's just going to be the first. The first will be the second, the third. This will be endless. He said, we put a stop to it. Very interesting. What does Yaakov say? What does Yaakov say after his sons respond that way? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. The next verse is about God speaking to Yaakov and telling him what to do. The Yifei Toyer and others say that Yaakov actually went and defended his sons. It was other nations that came. And says Yaakov was a fearsome warrior, and Yaakov took his bow and took a sword, and he went to the front of Shechem, and he says, don't fight with the kids, fight with me. I stand behind what they did. In closing, I want to share with you an incredible comment of the Baal HaTurim on the words, Bo Yaakov, Bnei Yaakov Bo Al HaChalolim. When Yaakov came, they stripped off all the clothes and wealth and so on and so forth. Vayavezu asa'ir asher timu achesim. The Baal HaTurim says, the word asher timu, timu achesim, shows up two other times in the scripture. There's three times in the scripture it says the word timu. One time is when it says timu achesim, they defiled Dina. The other time is in Yecheskel, timu es mikdashi, they defiled my Beis HaMikdash, talking about the first Beis HaMikdash. And then second, David HaMelech says, timu es heichel kodshecha. In other words, the word timu shows up three times. By each of them, it's an absolute, utter defilement of holiness. Two times the Beis HaMikdash, one time a Jewish girl. What does it tell us? It tells us that a Jewish girl being violated is like a Beis HaMikdash being violated. That's powerful words. And that's what Shimon and Levi said. You think we're just going to sit by and do nothing? We're just gonna watch this happen? And that's going to put us in a better situation? So did the Torah sanction this? You certainly cannot say that what they did was unsanctioned. You certainly cannot say what they did was an act of unwarranted brutality. You cannot call this a massacre. If you wish, what you can do is call this a plan gone wrong.
A plan what?
A plan gone wrong. They had a plan to rescue their sister, and the plan went wrong. You know, there's that famous village in Israel called Deir Yassin. Today it's called Har Nof. And the Arabs are endlessly pointing fingers. But if you read, what's the book, The Prime Ministers? What's his name? He describes the events of Deir Yassin, and basically it was a military maneuver gone wrong, and there was no massacre. The whole thing was a blood libel. It's not true. There was a military maneuver gone wrong there. And military maneuvers gone wrong don't end nicely. This was a desire, a sincere and very brave desire to rescue a girl who was raped, ravished, and abused. And the fact that in the secular world, Shimon and Levi are attacked and reviled and demonized instead of Shechem and Hamor and the people is just such an incredible hypocrisy. It's unbelievable. Like read the story, find out what happened. And you see the Rabbeinu Bechaya calls it an unfortunate incident. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that a loss of blood was tragic. The loss, Yaakov was pained by the loss of blood. But it's very telling that in the scripture itself, he never mentions it.
What's the lesson for us?
What's the lesson for us? One of many lessons for us is that the meaning of being a bar mitzvah is to be ready to risk your life to save another. HaChazeinu Yasas HaChiseinu is the resounding conclusion of the story. You cannot stand by when your brother's blood is being spilled. You cannot stand by when a woman is raped. You cannot stand by and be what we call the nice one. You know, come out of things looking good. If there's when there's a circumstance of a situation, it has to be dealt with. And you know what? Life is jagged. It doesn't always work the right way. And it doesn't always turn out beautiful. But to say that Yaakov's sons were murderers is anathema, and it's definitely, it's against what the Rambam says, the Chizkuni, all the Mefarshim, all the Rishonim speak about it. The Rambam says these people deserve to die. It was not necessarily Shimon Levi who was their job to carry it out, but then again, according to the vast majority of opinions, that was never their desire to begin with. What's the real lesson from this class? That if you actually learn Torah, and if you actually take the time to analyze the verses, and to read the sources, and to understand the story carefully, it's usually not what you thought it was. And it's usually not what people make it out to be. So maybe the lesson is you should learn Torah. We should learn Torah. We should learn Torah seriously and assiduously and dedicatedly. And hopefully we'll only know of goodness and of peace. And in our time, Mashiach will come and put an end to unfortunate circumstances and situations. You have a comment you want to make?
Amen.
You could.